Today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by 1010. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind Mint Engagement Rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Using only diamonds responsibly and sustainably sourced from Botswana, 10 design masters have produced each a set of 10 uniquely beautiful diamond rings, and they're available now exclusively at BlueNile.com. The exciting collection of truly unique, limited edition diamond engagement rings is available now only at BlueNile.com.
You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman, as always, I'm the host of this wonderful show, and joining me on the other line, because he could not get enough of me, so he had to speak to me 2 days in a row, from the West Indianapolis Community News and Forbes.com. He covers the Pacers. Mr. Tony is Tony. How are you?
I'm good. It's weird when the Pacers have 2 days off in a row because I don't know how to calibrate. I'm not preparing for a game. I'm not coming down from a game. I'm just sort of existing today. It's been very strange. Super Bowl. It's just strange. But the Super Bowl is really boring. So I'm glad everybody's pivoting to basketball at all the same time.
Yeah, Tony is a not the biggest NFL fan. Yeah, there have been some texts he has sent to me about hope.
I very much enjoyed the team everybody told me was going to be awesome in the Super Bowl, scored 9 points. It was very cool.
Yeah, I got crushed gambling, but that's not the point. So on today's podcast, we are going to talk about the Pacers' strength of schedule, talk about why it's getting might get easier and what we think the Pacers should be when they finish kind of this first half break. Then we'll discuss this week's preview. They play the Nets, the Hawks, and the Pistons. So three new teams, finally. No kind of repeat in the air. But to start today's podcast, we want to talk about the news coming from the coaching staff. So Bill Baino, one of the holdover assistants from Nate McMillan days, has stepped away from basketball. He, according to Woj, he has resigned, essentially citing mental health.
Under the Pacers, he's resigned.
Yeah. And so kind of to make his story short, basically he's had a really rough year with the pandemic and whatnot. He lost both his parents in the past 2 years, and basically it sounds like he just needed to get away and kind of, I don't know, get with his family and just sort of turn off basketball and, you know, live kind of a maybe more stress-free life for a little while.
Yeah, he's been away from the team. This is a made up date, but around the 25th of January, sometime around then, he's been away from the team since then. Bjorkgren hasn't really talked about it or mentioned anything about it. So something I think he's just needed some space away from basketball and how demanding it is. I think that part of that grind is what Woj mentioned is, you know, he cited mental health, the sources to Woj did, as part of the reason he wanted to step away. And the grind, the NBA grind, as Woj says, plus, you know, the loss of both of his parents and a couple close friends during the pandemic. He just wanted to step away and take some time away. So, of course, wishing the best for Bill Baino. I mean, that's so hard, and the pandemic's been so hard on many people, and to have to deal with that is really brutal, and I hope he can find what he needs. And I think Woj said he hasn't ruled out a return to coaching, so hopefully he can get the help he needs if he needs any and can take the time away to reflect and be ready to go one day to get back to doing what he loves. But in the interim, the Pacers are definitely hurt by losing their only holdover assistant, one of their better player development guys, one of their better guys with bigs. He works with Sabonis before every game. So it's definitely a tough short-term loss for this team.
Yeah, and I think one of the good thing about the NBA nowadays is they kind of destigmatized mental health issues. I mean, we saw it with Kevin Love and his Player Tribune thing. I think that was 2 years ago
now. DeRozan as well.
Right, DeRozan has talked about it. That's another thing. And while this stinks for the Pacers because obviously losing an assistant coach and somebody who kind of has been with the team, I don't know how many years he's been there now, but he clearly knows the ins and outs and somebody can kind of help bridge the gap between the kind of new coaching staff and the kind of old executive regime and kind of blend that. It's good that somebody can feel comfortable doing this in a way, right? You have to be able to understand, you have to be able to, you know, be honest with yourself when you're just in a rut and can't get out of it or whatever, what you need to do to kind of fix your mental health essentially. And so I'm glad the NBA has kind of taking the steps in the last few years to just kind of get people space to do things. Like this thing wasn't said right away. They didn't like publicize it originally. I think they kind of waited some time until he was ready to even tell anybody, which was good. So I just think this is one of the good things about today's NBA, which is it's just kind of destigmatized a lot of the things that maybe in the past people would, you know, say you're not man enough, you know, kind of stuff for that We don't say that anymore. It's really good.
I agree with you 100% on that. Again, I'm really happy that he's able to do this and get what he needs. From a short-term Pacers perspective, you imagine that someone will step into his assistant coaching role, whatever, if he's a coordinator or player development, whatever. Calvert Cheney has kind of sat in his spot on the bench. Scott Agnes has done a good job documenting seats on the bench this season, which sounds like a minor thing, but it matters. You know, it's who they – it's kind of a coach pecking order or what they're assigned for that game. So Calvert Cheney, former IU legend, will potentially have a bigger role in the immediately near future. Perhaps he fills that role permanently. Jay Michael of the Indy Star, we all know and love reporting on the Pacers. He tweeted out soon after Bano officially resigned that he said the Pacers are expected to replace Bill Bano's assistant coaching position, as he is told. So I think that there's a chance we hear a Pacers hire coming in the next couple of weeks or something. I don't know exactly what that timeline would look like, especially in a pandemic, but maybe we'll see a new member of the Pacers coaching staff. Maybe they go for a familiar face or something just for the same reasons, like you said, the bridge from old to new. Who knows? But, yeah, some changes coming as Bano steps away. So we'll have to see how that shakes out. I think Bjorkren, Nate Bjorkren did release a statement today. I did not pull that up in front of me. I probably should have, but basically, they're respecting his decision to step away. I appreciate the impact Coach Bano has had on our players and the Pacers organization over the last 5 years. All of us at the Pacers wish him the very best as he transitions to his next chapter, is what Bjorkren said. So we'll see what happens. We'll see who Bjorkren hires to be another assistant, but it sounds like someone else could be coming. So assistant coaches are, you know, minor to us because we don't speak to them that much, but they're pretty major impact on the team and their development and growth. So we'll see what kind of ripples this has on the team.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've talked about how the importance of Dan Burke for the Pacers past years and his defense. So, you know, from Popeye to in the past to Bill. So, I mean, we've talked. Yeah, I mean, they are important, and especially when you see some of the same, like, Pacers have been historically good at kind of developing centers and whatnot. Part of that is just a good assistant coaches who kind of have stayed in despite the change at the top over time. But I think we want to transition before we kind of do the schedule talk, and that is discuss highlight a player. So we've you know, talked about everybody from McDermott to McConnell to Malcolm to Sabonis to Jeremy Lamb over the past couple of weeks. We've, you know, ragged on Aaron Holiday a little bit and whatnot. But I think somebody we haven't talked about a lot because he hasn't played a ton of minutes, but he's finally getting some minutes. You've kind of been on he should play. We haven't talked about it since he started playing, and that's Goga.
Finally.
So I want to leave this to you to start because I know you were the big Goga needs to play more minutes guy. And he, to me, just on the surface, had looked – solid and is improving, which is what you want to see from a guy in his second year, basically.
Can you believe it that a second year player is better than he was in the first season of his career? I can't believe it, Adam. I thought he was a bust because he was bad against the Clippers. Anyway,
he hasn't even played a full season of games. He's played.
I know. What's he at, like 65 now or something?
Yeah, so, 64 according to B-ball refs.
Very dumb reactions to his first game. So Goga, the things he was really bad at, he got caught in his rookie year. He got caught in no man's land a lot. His screens were awful. This year, definitely a better screener. Actually, like an important thing, him and Aaron Holiday had a few good pick and rolls in that Jazz game, right? Like that duo linking up a lot is potentially something that could happen a lot in the Pacers' future if they both develop the way the team wants. That's good to see. You can see him challenging like star players at the rim, like Gobert a few times, Zion Williamson a few times. I mean, unafraid. Defensive rotations are a little better. He's still definitely rough. Like, I'm not propping him up as, like, some awesome rotation player, like a surefire backup or anything, right? He's only playing a lot because of foul trouble from other bigs recently. You know, in the three games where there was little foul trouble, the second Charlotte game, Philly and Memphis, he played 9 minutes, 6 minutes, and 6.5 minutes. So, again, not playing a ton, but definitely looks better in the minutes. He kind of knows where to be. He actually looks pretty athletic, which is pretty weird. I did not expect that, so looks a lot better in many areas, definitely helping the team and, you know, maybe not living up to his draft position yet, but definitely showing the growth that they need from him. And if he's going to be their backup center of the future when one of the bigs is ultimately moved, this is definitely the steps you wanted to see from him as he grows in his career.
Yeah. I actually thought athletically he came out – when he came out, that was the big thing about him, that he was sort of this, like, 7-foot guy who was – really athletic for a guy his size. He's 7'2", isn't he? He's even bigger than that.
Yeah, for his height, he's somewhat athletic, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you look around the guys who've taken around him. I mean, obviously Brandon Clark is the one where you're like, oh, well, it's taking him at – he went 21 to Memphis in 2019. But, I mean, Hero went 5 picks 14. Before him. But then Langford went 14. Langford's not really been anything yet so far. So, he's, you know, he's one of those guys who's in that kind of, at 18, it's a hit or miss. We've seen it with TJ Leaf, right? TJ Leaf was a bust, but then one year they picked Granger at 17. So you can, that's kind of the dichotomy you could get at that kind of pick. No, what I've liked so far from him especially is, so in just 10 games right now, he has 11 blocks. In 54 games last year, he had 37 total. So that means if he plays, if he did it times five, he'd be on pace for 55 blocks, or like a 25% increase from last year. That's the thing where he's going to have to, that's the guy I have to earn minutes ultimately, is can he play defense, right? That's how most young players earn minutes, is on the defensive end of the floor. Right. Because offensively, his three-point percentage is irrelevant at this point because he's taken 12 threes, so that's not a sample that means anything. And honestly, his career, he's taken a total of 54, not really a useful sample size for three-point shooting for anybody essentially, but he's going to have to earn it defensively, right? Can he basically replace kind of Turner's rim protection at times, and can he fit in almost in a way to the Turner role on the bench next to Sabonis, right? That's where he's going to have to, he can earn a lot of minutes, right? If he can be 70% of Turner with the bench unit, then he can play next to Sabonis in that kind of extra lineup, that, you know, the Sabonis plus bench lineup, and that would earn him the minutes he needs to play. So that's what I like the most, is this sort of, that's the improvement defensively, and what we want to see from a guy who's, you know, he's 6'11", but he's got a wingspan. I don't know what I mean. It's ridiculous. He seems like he could go above the rim without jumping basically with his hands. And that's what you want to see, is that ability to be like a kind of rim protecting menace. Cause that's how the center you earn your minutes in this league to start at least.
Yeah, I agree. A lot of key growth, and the arms are everywhere, which is good. Still, again, kind of runs poorly, and definitely.
Yeah, but look at Turner's first few years too.
Yeah, I know.
Kind of weird too.
Yeah,
pretty fast.
And I think his role pop, like timing and knowing which one to do, because he has a reputation as a shooter. He has not been that yet. He's 18.5% from three for his career.
He's taken 54 threes, and that's not even like. we would never call that a statistic sample size for anything.
Yeah. If he hits like 15 of his next 46, he will be at like almost 30%.
Sabonis taking 64 threes himself this year in 24 games. So like, yeah. I don't, 54 threes in 64 mm-hmm. games is nothing.
Yeah.
Sorry. Doesn't mean.
But if the shot comes, like, he'll show all the stuff he showed pre-draft, because that was a big appeal, is that he could shoot. But I think a lot of the other stuff you saw, you know, he played a lot of zone in Europe, so his defense is a little tough to read, but his timing's really good. He understands the game. He's starting to get in the right spots. He's just got to read the game a little bit faster off of screens and just be ready to be a little more captainy on defense. But he's starting to come together. He's looking more like the backup they need him to be. And I'm glad that he's developing, because they need to hit a draft pick in this era, and they have really struggled there. So far this year has been a good one for him. I think they'll continue to give him playing time going forward, because one, it helps reduces Sabonis minutes a little bit. I wish I had it up. Sabonis' minutes since Goga started playing more, but also it's just good for his development. So I've been happy with how he's playing and that they're actually using him.
Yeah, and he'll eventually get a chance when one of the centers gets hurt. I'm assuming it's a small stretch where he can actually play.
That's why I went so crazy when Turner was out and they didn't play him at all. It made no sense.
Yeah, because
but they have since reconciled that error. At least a good step is realizing you messed up and not doing it again.
Because I think also a fair thing for a guy like him is to realize this is, he's still kind of in his first year. His first year was basically stopped by the pandemic. He's not from America, so it's just, I mean, I can't imagine how much harder that was for him to kind of figure out how to adjust to, you know, life in another country and then being locked down in another country. Like, that's just a lot for somebody. Yeah. You know, I'm 23 years old, going to be 24, and I thought it was a lot. And I'm not, you know, playing basketball, and he's younger than me. I mean, he's only 20, 21. So, and we just remember that it's sort of his first, year that we can, if you in that context, he probably still deserves another year or two before we really start giving him, like, a really hard judge. I mean, he's got to improve, but like what he's doing now is enough to say, just keep playing him, see if he can kind of consistently get better and better over time.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. I'm just looking forward to seeing how he progresses through the years, because I think these Euro guys get a little undervalued, and I think he can be good once he figures out the differences in the Euro to NBA game and gets acclimated, because, yeah, like you said, the visa issues, the pandemic, him being hurt have really stunted his growth, and I think once he breaks through those things, he'll look a lot better.
Yep. So let's do this. Let's take one quick break, and then we're going to talk about the Pacers' upcoming schedule before we finally hit that first half break. But first, today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by BetOnline.ag. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, NFL, and NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even has bets for awards, TV shows, and even reality TV. Real-time odds are updated, and props are on anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. The best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. And right now, if you go to betonline.ag, promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get a 50% welcome bonus. And right now, I'm looking at one particular bet on betonline.ag, and that is the season MVP. LeBron James is just shooting up. I think Tony and I did our podcast last week previewing or like kind of talking mid-season awards. Neither of us had LeBron. LeBron is now the odds on a player for MVP at +175. My MVP, Joel Embiid, was +450 right now, and Tony's Nikola Jokic is +325. Worth looking at. Like I said, go to betonline.ag right now. Your promo code locked on. You get a 50% welcome bonus. Betonline.ag, your sports online book experts. 24 games in, the Pacers have 12 games left, and it is 36 first half. They have one game that they didn't play. So with 12 games left, they have the 10th easiest schedule remaining.
I have 13 games left, but either way.
I'm sorry. Why do I have that off then?
I don't know. Carry on.
Sorry, with 13 games left, my bad. I guess it depends, too, if they reschedule when they reschedule the Suns game. They have the 10th easiest remaining strength of schedule, according to Tankathon.com.
Yeah, Brooklyn coming up this week, obviously tough. But like we talked about yesterday, after that, Detroit, one of the worst records in the league. Atlanta under 500, Chicago under 500, Minnesota under 500, Houston under 500, San Antonio, mediocre team in general. Golden State has Steph Curry, but mediocre in general. Then Boston, who's good. New York under 500, Philly, who's good. Cleveland under 500, and Denver, who's good. So three legit good squads after this Brooklyn game the rest of the way. So they could go on a nice little run. They could recover from the slump. I mean, they could be under 500 by Wednesday. So they could recover from that slump. If they really show the team that they are and pummel these teams, it could be a good ending schedule.
Yeah, so you're right. They're 13 games. I miscounted, of course. Here's something I'm not that bad at. So when you look at their schedule with the 13 left, there are four opponents who I think are better, like for sure. And you're talking about Denver, Philly, Brooklyn, and I guess I put Boston in that. And Boston actually maybe is more of a toss-up, but for now Boston is.
No, I think it's for sure right now because Levert and Warren are out. I mean, they struggled. They had Depot and Warren against Boston. That's how long ago it was that they played the Celtics twice throughout the season, and they still split. So basically removed two of their best four players from those games. Like, no, they're worse than Boston right now.
Okay. And so then I had another set of, I think it was, let me do this real quick. They play Atlanta, they play Houston, Golden State, Cleveland are four teams they could lose to. Maybe I'm overestimating Cleveland.
They could lose to San Antonio.
San Antonio, too. So I'd say five, right? That's five. Yeah. And then, so that leaves, four other games they should win against Detroit, Minnesota, Chicago, and Houston in New York.
Yeah. So no game is a must win, like ever, but if they lose to Brooklyn, the Detroit, Atlanta, Chicago, Minnesota, Houston games, and I'm only putting Houston in here because, one, they're struggling right now, and two, there's going to be so much emotion in that game. That's the first Depot versus the Pacers game since the trade. That game's going to be very interesting. But if I think they need to win four of those because they'll be under 500. They can get to 16-14 if they win four of those. And then they can kind of limp through the end and still be, like, right in the thick of the East hunt. And those are some easy games. Like, Detroit just traded Derrick Rose, right? So they are – I mean, they are bad, right? Like, Jeremy Grant's good, and then Blake sucks and this year, and they just are rough. They have struggled with the Pistons in past seasons, which is frustrating, but they need to win that game. The Hawks are right behind them in the standings. I mean, there's a chance that the winner of that game walks out fifth. You know, that's when they should win. There's no reason they shouldn't win, but the Hawks have a lot of variability. You know, Chicago they already beat. Larry Markkinen's hurt. Minnesota sucks this year. Like, they really need to go on a big stretch here, and I think that schedule is doing them some favors, but they have to take advantage.
Yeah. I was thinking by the break they need to be – probably have 20 wins, so 20 and 17.
So eight of these last 13, that's definitely doable.
Right. The problem is they play a lot of them on the road. So they only have four home games left. So
do you recall that when we analyzed the schedule before the season, right? Everybody loves that show. Adam predicted
I love that show. Maybe our best hates it.
Okay, fine. I love that show. Adam predicted a 7-game win streak after this Brooklyn game. You have wins all the way between Brooklyn and Boston, which is definitely plausible, right?
Like, yeah, I'm looking to know that. They can win those. They don't play it, right? There's no back to backs there. That's a big one.
There's not. Well.
yeah, you didn't realize that. You didn't see I was counting that up.
For us scheduling the podcast too, so yay.
They have a little extra break between Minnesota and Houston, 2 days off, you know. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, those are definitely seven winnable games now. They'll probably blow one because that's what happens, if not maybe three. But
yeah, prior to the season, you had them going 9-4 in these final 13, and I had them going 8-5, which anything more than six I'll take as a win because I think they need to be over 500 at the break. I think at or around the All-Star break, one, a beat-up team getting a ton of rest is really helpful, even if the guys aren't coming back right away. Two, I think we'll get the updates about probably LeVert around then. I don't know about Warren, but you know, just something to keep the team spirits up and things like that will be helpful too. So just a nice needed break for a team that's relying a lot on backups and playing heavy, heavy minutes for their starters will be really good. So being over 500 should absolutely be the goal, like win every game. But, you know, they can easily get there and being 500 at the break seems very plausible. They're finally going to have these cupcake games that we've talked about they haven't had yet. So I think it's important to take advantage, especially in this stretch where you have them winning so many in a row. Because we both have them losing three of the last five.
Yeah, they need to, of the four kind of really good teams they play, right, Philly, Denver, Boston, and Brooklyn, they probably need to win one of them, if not two, to really sort of improve in a way, like to get to 20, let's say 21 wins, right?
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
21 would be a lot.
I don't yeah, know so that. Once they get to 20, I mean, we could joke they win seven in a row, but I don't think they're going to at this point. They don't look like that kind of team right now.
Yeah.
So let's say they can win 5 of 7, although that's five wins. Let's say they can beat New York and they can beat Cleveland. I get you to seven. They got to win one of the other ones.
Essentially. Yeah, that's right? Possible, I guess.
And it is possible because
Brooklyn's without KD right now. You know,
and on a back to back, right?
Yeah.
So that's a bit. That's we'll talk about that on that next segment. But I'm sure there's another game in there in a back to back. You know, maybe the cross Philly team when Embiid doesn't play and this team actually freaking win. You know, stuff like that. I mean, they've had success against Denver in the past, but it's a back to back, so who knows? I mean, there's some opportunities here. I don't know. They need to definitely win a game. Didn't expect, I guess.
When's the last time they won a game that I went into the game thinking they didn't really have a shot at winning? I mean, they've lost 5 of 6 right now. Like, it's been really brutal. I think the last time they won a game that I was genuinely surprised that they won was probably in Portland, and that was almost a month ago.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's probably that win and the first Boston win, right?
They really need that. Yeah, they really need a shove at win. Like, they need to beat someone really good for me to get back to optimistic. Because I think that they can, given the schedule and how good we think this team can be, win 7 or 8 of these games until the break. But given the way they're playing, and there's 13 left, 6 or 7 would be more likely. So getting their footing back, this 2 days off are really important. And doing well this week against a pretty – I mean, they're all on the road, but a much easier schedule. The next 2 weeks, really, doing very well is very important to me. It's kind of an inflection point with this team of, you know, setting their identity for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and this is where the team in the past really sort of separated themselves and was able to, you know, let's say, improve from what we thought is they would go on these runs against these bad teams and just kind of like – they maybe wouldn't smoke them, but they would just have, like, consistent 8-point wins night after night after night, right? They would go in Chicago. They would go in Detroit. They would go into Orlando, or they would play one of, you know, they just keep winning. And that's how they like every year we're at 48 wins when we thought they'd be at 45. And that's sort of what they need to do at this point. If you had to pick one of the four and maybe I'm giving you an estimate away of the four good teams they play or great teams, I guess we could talk about, which one do you think they actually win?
Brooklyn's my most likely one, because I've watched the Pacers enough the last couple of years to know that them losing four games in a row is like unheard of. Kevin Durant's not playing. They match up not terribly. Sabonis has destroyed DeAndre Jordan for years. Brooklyn, I think, is a good shot. And Boston, I think, is the next best shot.
Yeah, I think Boston is the best shot. And simply because I think – so for Turner to win Defensive Player of the Year, he's going to have to show up on, like, a big national TV game. Just not – probably not. I'm not being serious here, but I'm saying, like, to kind of get that credentials to, like, really – he's got, you know, if he a Milwaukee, right, should have been shut down Giannis or, you know what I mean? That would have been, like, big. But that's a back-to-back, so that wasn't going to happen. Boston, an opportunity where they're not on a back-to-back. It's on ESPN. They have played well in Boston in the past. Turner has played well in the Garden. He's had a game winner in the past there. So, or not a game, like, not a game clincher, I think, was what I'm thinking of from a couple years ago. So, I don't know. And that's an opportunity, I think, for – and, like, Sabonis we saw, right, 32 points against Milwaukee. It's a chance for some of the Pacers players who are – pretty good to kind of finally on a national stage say, hey, we're actually a really good team, everybody. Or we're really good players. You know, we're top 20. Most say I'm a top 20 player. Hey, let's look over here maybe.
So. Yeah, they need to put their stamps on these games. For those who want some optimism here, one is the schedule, but two,
before the season when we predicted every game. Adam, of the 24 games the Pacers have played so far, has predicted 15 of them correctly, and I only predicted 11 of them correctly. So his pulse of the team before the season is apparently way better than mine. And Adam has them winning 9 of their next 13 games.
It's like 60%. If we did a test, that would be a D.
Well, I'm below 50%.
So. Well, you know, you weren't the best student, Tony.
So Adam's apparently pulse of the team will lead them to a 9-4 stretch here to close them out, and then they'll be 21-16 at the break. And then we can all stop worrying about this insanely terrible run where they've lost 5 of 6 games.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully they get 20 wins. I'm keeping a number in my mind, 20 wins at the break. That's the number.
Yeah, you talked about 50 wins every year we've done this pod, and last year they would have done it if they actually played enough games. So maybe 20 wins can be your new 50 wins until the break. And then we can pivot again.
Yeah. All right, let's take one more break, and then we'll preview this week's games. But first, today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by RockAuto.com. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com right now. Shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules to brake pads to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpets. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specifications, and prices that you prefer. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low and the same for do-it-yourselfers or professionals, so why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On and how do you hear about us box so they know that we sent you. Main selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. All right, so on Wednesday night, the Pacers will take on the Brooklyn Nets, who are 14-11. As you noted, they're without Kevin Durant, but I believe they have the rest of their big three available. I guess Irving did not play. He didn't. He's probably Tuesday game against Detroit with a thumb injury. But I think that's probably going to end up playing. I don't know if they have any back-to-back things they're doing, you know, not playing certain guys the second nights, but the Nets are the third-best team in the East right now, and do you have their net rating up?
I do. The Nets are 7th in net rating, which is a very interesting number because they're 3rd in offense and 27th in defense. So they just score the ball a lot.
Yeah, well, obvious because they've got, you know, a three-headed monster of offensive firepower between
Irving. I fortunately recorded the Nets preview with Matt Brooks, which will be out tomorrow before this podcast. So I have a very good feel for the Nets right now. I'm all over them, but yeah, they've been interesting since the trade. KD's not going to play, and like because it's a back-to-back, which, by the way, for you Pacers people, you should watch Nets Pistons on Tuesday because then you'll get a feel for who the Pacers are going to play on Wednesday with Brooklyn and Thursday with Detroit. But the Nets with a back-to-back, like Kyrie in theory, who's dealing with finger issues, could sit down in a back-to-back. Harden, who knows, this year he'll probably play both games, but who knows. They're dealing with COVID stuff with Durant. Shumpert, who they just signed, is hurt. Dinwiddie's hurt. Claxton's hurt. Like, you just never know what the Nets team that's going to show up is going to be. But Durant is for sure out, and that changes them a lot because, you know, they're starting Jeff Green in his place. That's a huge downgrade, and that probably means that DeAndre Jordan and Jeff Green are going to be matching up with Sabonis and Turner in some way, which is a very favorable matchup for the Pacers, even though the Nets are going to be insanely hard to stop.
Yeah, I love how you look at the Nets, like on BYU, you look at the opponents versus team stats, and their team as an offense are all like single digits. That means they're all in the top 10 for everything.
Yeah.
Like they're second in field goals attempted or field goals made, I'm sorry. Their first in field goal percentage, 5th in 3-point attempt, 3 points made, 8th in or 4th in percentage, you know, first and 2-point percentage, first in total points. And then on the other side, they're like 30th and 2-point percentage allowed to their opponents, 29th in points allowed. Like, it's just kind of the like, this is like the video game version of a team, essentially. Like, it's like, let's just put all the offensive guys who can't play defense together on a team and let's just outscore you. And that's like what they basically did. And they're really good. I mean, I assume at some point they're going to be the best team in the East. When I think Durant might be the best player in the East, maybe the best player in the league when he's finally fully 100% healthy and can stop, you know, getting near people who have COVID and maybe, you know, stay in his house for 12 hours or for, you know, an entire day or whatnot. But, yeah, this team is really good. And honestly, they're basically getting a huge break with no Durant and a back-to-back. Like, this is a game where you should try to win or, you know, should be able to win because you're a decent team and you got a huge scheduling break.
Playing against James Harden and Kyrie Irving, you should not ever be expected to win. I would still
I don't. But this is one of those games where if you're a good team, you take advantage of the scheduling break.
Yeah,
to win, if that makes sense.
So I think the Nets, they just have so much spacing on offense. It's ridiculous, right? They have so many shooters. Like Harden's at 38% with them. Kevin Durant's at 45%. He's not playing, obviously. Kyrie's at 43%. Joe Harris is making 50% of 7 threes a game. Ridiculous. Jeff Green is hitting 43% from deep. Timothée, he's French. I have to say it right. Timothée Luwawu-Cabarrot is hitting 37% of his threes. So they're just getting good shooting from so many of their key rotation guys, plus the fact that Kyrie and Harden can drive like crazy, and they've got lob threats. They have so much space just everywhere. So the Pacers disrupt the ball, make passes happen strategy. They're going to have to be in perfect sync on defense to recover to shooters because the Nets are going to get a lot of three-point attempts up, and they have great shooters to do it. So the defense, not like on the ball, they're going to do the disruptor thing. We get it. It's going to come. They just have to rotate the shooters perfectly. They did a pretty good job of that against the Jazz. They have to do it against the Nets, or else they're just going to be watching the ball go through the net all night.
Yeah, so – for Butcher's wise, I mean, it's, you know, Harden and Irving. I don't think we even need to, like, need to do
anything. Yeah, I watched Nets Clippers. I'm taking Kyrie. I watched Nets Clippers this season. Kyrie is the best player in that game. I mean, it was ridiculous how good he was. He looks so smooth this year. Christian Winfield of the New York Daily News, I think. I don't want to get that wrong. But he's been on a few Pacers press conferences this year after the Karras trade and after a couple other things. And he asked about Kyrie recently. And him and Bjorkgren were talking about how, like, he's just so unpredictable with when he's going to jump and when he's actually going to release the ball. And he's just so shifty that he's so hard to guard. And I think the Pacers, who have been struggling with guys getting downhill, will really struggle with him. So I'm picking Kyrie. He's been insane this year.
Well, I'll go with Harden. I'm having a triple-double with the team on 23.5 points, 11.8 assists, and 8.1 rebounds.
11.8 assists per game.
Yeah, it's back to his old
– insane stuff. Insane stuff.
Well, back to his old days. He used to do it all the time.
Yeah.
You know, that was like his – that was what he – when he led the league and when he kind of made the transition to point guard 3 or 4 years ago, that was like the big jump he made.
I'll let you take the obvious, Butcher.
Yeah. So X-factor-wise
– or I'm sorry, the obvious X-factor, yeah.
Yeah, Sabonis. You sort of kind of already said it, but why don't you – you know what? You said Sabonis. You take Sabonis and explain why he's the X-factor.
Well, he killed the Nets last year. I think they won in Brooklyn twice last year. They won their first game of the season in Brooklyn, and they won that game where Nazemi Trulong was the backup point guard as well. But a lot of the reason they won is because DeAndre Jordan can't move anymore, and Sabonis just destroyed him over and over, right? Like, Sabonis can post up, post him up, and pass around him and, you know, find cutters and stretch him out now even because he's shooting a lot better. DeAndre Jordan is not going to be able to guard Sabonis, and the thing he's good at rebounding, he can't do as well with Sabonis out there. I doubt they'll put DJ on Turner because then they're just exposing the paint completely. Maybe they will, but Sabonis is due for a very big game if he's guarded by DeAndre Jordan, and if he's not, the Pacers' offense is due for a big game because then Jordan will be far away from the basket. So I'm picking Sabonis.
I think that's a fair one. So the Nets have lost their last two games. Hopefully they beat the Pistons so they don't, you know, they feel less motivated.
They come in with a chip.
Yeah, so a game they lost on – what day was this? February 5th. That was, I think, Thursday. To the Raptors, who I think are a similar team to the Pacers because of coaching, one reason, and they have kind of a similar roster in some ways. Kyle Lowry had 30 points in that game, and I think my X factor would be Malcolm Brogdon. You're going to draw Irving or Harden, one of those guys, on you probably. Neither of them is a very good defender, frankly, or at least when they're not trying. They're not good defenders, and that's this year they really haven't tried defensively. And that guy has to be able to almost in a way match one of the two guards, right? So, ironically, Lowry led the, you know, outscored both Harden and Kyrie. So Harden had 17 and Kyrie had 19. So he almost combined to outscore them. Not sure Brogdon can do that, but if Brogdon can put up, you know, 26 to 20 to 30 points, that would keep the Pacers in this game. And the goal in this game is just to match them toe to toe offensively and hope at the end of the game you can kind of beat them because they're either too gassed or you have a better play that's drawn up.
Yeah, that's a good choice. And if teams keep going under on him, he's got to make shots eventually. I think he can do it, and the Nets are a good chance to do it. But the Nets have Kyrie and Harden, and I'm picking the Nets to win because they have Kyrie and Harden, even though the Pacers beat James Harden earlier this season.
Wow, when you said, I think it was before the show, even in this during this podcast, losing four games in a row is rare for the Pacers. You didn't.
Unfortunate timing, but they play the best team in the East as their fourth game. So, sorry.
I'm going to pick a win because I need to be optimistic finally. all right.
Fair enough.
So the Pacers' next matchup, they go from playing maybe the best team in the East to the worst team in the East. The 5-18 Pistons, who I have numbers up, are 26th in offensive rating, 20th in defensive rating, and 25th overall in net rating at a -5.2. I think if I'm going to go with Butcher, The obvious choice in this one is Jeremy Grant, who is 24 points per game on a pretty good shooting, 45% from the 44% from the field and 39 from three. Doing what I think, I guess, nobody thought he could do, but clearly is a good stats, bad team guy.
With absolutely no specific offense to anyone on the Pistons, they're just gross.
they're badly constructed.
Yeah, that's kind of intentional. They have new management this year, right? So they're kind of stuck with the guys like Blake Griffin that they had in the past that they can't really get rid of. They were stuck with Rose. They just got rid of him. They're transitioning from era to era, so they're trying to figure out what they need to do. So it's just gross. Like, Jeremy Grant's a new era guy, but it's weird to me that they are kind of leaning in on youth. They have Killian Hayes, Sadiq Bey, Sabi Mikhailiuk, Sekou Doumbouya. Like, you can go on the list. But then they play a lot of Jeremy Grant, a lot of DeLon Wright, and a lot of Mason Plumlee, right? It's in a lot of Wayne Ellington. It's kind of weird what they're doing, and that just makes them gross. They are last in the league in field goal percentage. They just rely on winning the possessions game. They're pretty good. Steals team, not great, like 12th, I think. So the way the Pistons beat you is they just kind of played mediocre defense and collaborated it that way, but they're only 20th in defense. So Grant is the perfect choice for Butcher because he's the only guy on their team averaging more than whatever. Rose had 14 points a game. Rose is gone now. So yeah. He's the only guy on their active roster averaging more than 12.3 points per game. They have nothing really hard to contain outside of him. So if you slow him down, you slow down all of the Pistons.
Yeah, so when it comes to X factors, the Pistons they lead the league in
nothing.
No, I'm sorry. They lead the league in like drawing the least amount of fouls, if that makes sense.
Yes. Right.
So that's what I was trying to get to. So this is a good opportunity for both of the centers, actually, because it seems like I would assume by that stat, this team is not as is maybe contact averse. Usually that means if you can't get a lot of fouls, then you aren't trying to draw a lot of contact, which is a good thing for somebody like Turner and Sabonis, who are guys who can get in foul trouble occasionally. But this feels like the kind of game for one of those two centers, probably Turner, frankly, defensively, to have a maybe 4 or 5 block night and just be a huge impact, just kind of guys trying to get around him and missing, you know, odd layups here or there.
They also traded their second best foul drawer in Derrick Rose.
So. Yeah, so it's going to be even worse.
Yeah, Derrick Rose would have been my butcher if we did this podcast before this morning. So he is traded. And I mean, I have to pick someone other than Grant.
No, you don't pick it. No, just do X Factor. The butcher.
Mason Plumlee. I actually think Mason Plumlee is good. I'm the only person left on earth who thinks Mason Plumlee is good. He can kind of pass for a big, and not a lot of bigs can pass. Yeah, you know, Blake Griffin really stinks. But guarding, he could, in theory, finally, you know, actually it happens a lot against the Pacers this year. These guys finally have their resurgent game because they are left open a little bit more often. Blake Griffin has scored over 20 points two times this year. He had 26 against the Cavs on their second game of the season. He had 23 against the Lakers 2 weeks ago. But I think he can be a butcher because anyway. But anyway, my X factor is whoever is guarding Blake Griffin because he is so volatile and he is probably their second best player now that Derrick Rose is off the team. If Grant goes off but Blake doesn't, I still don't think the Pistons have enough scoring to catch the Pacers. So whoever is guarding Blake, it's probably going to be Sabonis, and I don't know if I can pick him again, but it might be Miles, so I'll pick Miles for the possessions he is guarding Blake Griffin.
So you picked the same one I picked, basically.
Yes, I kind of did.
I mean, Detroit is
look, their bench sucks. I could have picked the bench. Like, they're just look, they're in year one of a transitional rebuild. Like, they're just gross.
It's yeah, they're all in bad. For Jalen Scruggs. Suggs.
Yeah, Jalen Suggs is going to be picked third, but interesting choice.
Oh, I honestly, going to be honest, I know zero about college basketball this year. I literally pulled up mockdraft.com. That was the first pick I saw.
Hey, Suggs is good. I don't want to belittle Jalen Suggs, but
who's your number one pick? Who's your number one pick?
Cade Cunningham is a no doubter number one pick this year.
I have not – college basketball has not started. Has it started yet? Is there college basketball going on? I've not paid attention. Sorry.
Just Evan Mobley, I'll do draft eventually, but Evan Mobley and Cade Cunningham are so obviously the
Pacers have a pick this year, so I will have to pay attention at some point. Okay, so the Pacers then.
I think the Pacers win this game easily, even on a back-to-back.
I would agree with you on that one.
If they lose both of these games, we will have a sky is falling night to talk about the losing 7 of 8.
Yeah, you and I will be back on the podcast Thursday.
Yeah, if they lose both of these, if they lose one of them, even if they lose to the Pistons, like I guess we'll stay away. But whew, man, they need to beat the Pistons.
Okay, so the Pacers take on the Hawks on Saturday. That's the third game this week. All three on the road. The Hawks are 11-12, and they're just behind the Pacers at 6 in the East. They have
back-to-back?
No. Oh, the Hawks on a back-to-back? I don't
know. Yep.
They are. They're telling me they are. You're not asking a question.
I am telling you the Hawks are on a back-to-back.
Oh, yes. Fantastic. That is the best news I've heard this week.
Yeah, the Pacers need this. The Hawks, by the way, rare scheduling tidbit. I think this is one of the only times the entire first half of the schedule, a team has 3 days off. The Hawks are in the middle of it right now. So they played February 6th, and then they don't play again after that until the 10th. So they got a rare, huge game.
This is the third game. This is the third game in four nights for them.
Yeah, it is after that big gap. The big gap's definitely a factor in them having that. So this could be a tired Hawks team, but we'll have to see. Bogdan Bogdanovic could be out. He's been out for a while for them. Chris Dunn has been out for a while for them. DeAndre Hunter just got announced out on Sunday. So they are missing some rotation guys. They signed like 1,000 of them, so they still have a good rotation. But they're missing some key guys. But really, the whole discussion with the Hawks, for me, with Hunter out at least, because he's been really good this year, is two guys, John Collins, Trae Young, right? Trae Young killed the Pacers last year many times. John Collins is just a stud, so slowing down those two guys is really hard, and that makes the Hawks at least decent every game.
Yeah, Trae Young, I think last year he had a 45. So last year he had a 49-point game against the Pacers, and he had a 41-point game against the Pacers.
Yeah, he destroyed them. But here's the thing.
They beat him, though. The Pacers beat him, and
they won
two of them. They lost the 41-point game to him.
So, the thing is about Dan Burke's old defensive schemes is they were good. They were clearly very good. Trae Young is the anti-Dan Burke guy, right? Drop coverage, he just shoots right over you, and he can shoot from everywhere so that, you know, them being ready for everything doesn't really matter. Nate Bjorkgren's defense, get the hell on the ball, make him give it up, make him make mistakes, is great for defending guys like Trae Young. So I think Young is less likely to have good games than he has in the past against the Pacers, but I think John Collins is very likely to have better games than he's had in the past against the Pacers. But DeAndre Hunter, people don't know a lot about DeAndre Hunter. He got picked really high last year and struggled. He's been very good for the Hawks this year. So him being out is a huge deal. They're missing a lot of firepower and scoring between him and Bogdanovic. So forcing the ball out of Trae Young's hands the way the Pacers would like to do with their blitz the ball disruptive defense could be actually a very good recipe given the way the Hawks are constructed right now.
Yeah, and he's slightly down in usage. I mean, it's still high, 32%, but he's being a little more deferential this year than he was last year. So last year he took 20-something shots. This year he's down to about 17.5 or 18, I guess, closer to 18 shots. Last year closer to 21. So he is being a little less of like taking every open 35-foot three. Just like a tiny bit. So that's honestly why this team is probably even a little better, is because they're fun. You know, he's efficient enough. He shoots, 35% from three, but he's not like uber efficient, I guess, if that makes it for Trae Young. So when you get to other guys, it kind of helps. So who do you pick as your butcher? Which one do you want?
I'm actually not picking either of them.
Are you going to pick Trae Young or John Collins? Okay.
I am not.
I'll take Trae Young because, he'll probably have a 30-point game.
Yeah, the thing about Trae is even on his off nights, he's going to score 30 because he's amazing at drawing fouls, like ridiculously good at it, to the point that Steve Nash, our first-year coach, is like, I hate this dude's like butt-bashing defensive thing that he does. He's amazing. He's always a good pick. But mine's Clint Capella.
Interesting.
Because, one, Clint Capella leads the league in rebounds this year at 14.6 per game.
The Andre Drummond method.
Whew. Yeah, of having a high-usage guard in his line. He also averages five offensive rebounds per game. And the Pacers have been getting murdered on the offensive glass recently. I mean, 15 against the Jazz. Absurdly terrible. And I'm imagining Turner will be on him. Maybe they put Sabonis on him. We'll see. Either way, the way he's rebounding, and he almost had a triple-double block game a few weeks ago. I think he might have gotten the 10 in blocks. He did. He had 13 points, 10 blocks, and 19 rebounds against the Timberwolves, right? So Capella's had some insane stat lines around the rim since he's really blended with this Hawks team. And he looks really good. So they're going to have to do an awesome job keeping him off the glass and knowing where he's at all times, because he is very underratedly good this season.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like a surprise that a guy who was, super young and pretty good with James Harden, when you trade him, that he all of a sudden goes to a player with a player who plays similar to James Harden, can produce similar stats to that.
And can I say something about Clint Capella, by the way?
Yeah.
He's a European center, and it took him about 3 seasons to really get acclimated to the NBA. Oh,
interesting. Also, he has like basically the same kind of as Turner. He's got a year more than Turner
He's playing about as good as Turner this year, which sounds crazy because Turner's been good, but Capella's been that good.
Capella's a good, like, he's a good NBA player that a team who decided they didn't want centers got rid of, and a team who said, well, we'll take him because we need good players, and got impression of him. I mean,
great choice by the Hawks to do that.
Yeah, he's not like the, oh, wow, this guy's like going to blow you away player, but he's like, he's going to be in there. He's going to be a great kind of duo on like kind of the rim running kind of Lob City-esque style, and he can rebound the hell out of the ball, and he can make the right pick and roll play. So I think he just does a lot of little good things right. He's kind of the Thaddeus Young in a way. But
selfishly, I want the Pacers to destroy the Hawks because of all the offseason stuff about like, oh, the Pacers are going to miss the playoffs. The Hawks are going to jump them in the standings. I hope they come out with a chip and just absolutely smash the Hawks. However, the Hawks are really good. This is a tough game. I honestly think this one could go either way. I really don't have an inkling for who could win, right? Trey could have a big game, but also the Hawks defense isn't particularly good. Did we actually ever read the Hawks numbers?
I did. We never did X Factors, though, in which mine was going to be Malcolm Brogdon's ability to stop Trae Young and Megan Leonard and score a ton of points.
Great choice. They're 15th in defense, the Hawks, and I think the Pacers bench can have a really good game against the banged-up Hawks, whose bench is like Solomon Hill, Danilo Gallinari, Cam Reddish.
Oh, man, okay. Solomon Hill. He just keeps popping up, man.
He got his contract fully guaranteed. He's playing okay with the Hawks. But they do not, despite, you know, Kevin Huerter starts now because of all their injuries. So they're going to have a very, very poor bench backcourt. So Aaron Holiday, Jeremy Lamb, TJ McConnell, all could be very key guys in this game. If any one of them steps up, I think the Pacers should win. So my expectation is going to be the bench, even though Jeremy Lamb is technically a starter.
Is this the game where Aaron Holiday goes toe-to-toe with Trey because of the same draft class?
Remember, Aaron Holiday's big coming-out game was against the Hawks. So maybe.
That's right. That was like 2.5 years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know. This could be that game, right? Where Aaron Holiday just go toe-to-toe with Trey.
That would be fantastic for both Aaron Holiday and the Pacers. Let's hope Aaron Holiday can break out of his first third of the season slump. But I think, my gut is telling me not to say this, but I just kind of think the Pacers are going to win this game. I don't know why. They did a good job against the Hawks last year. You know, they won twice, I believe. They lost once in Atlanta. But they won a game, and that Trae Young scored 49 points. I think that a better defensive scheme against Trae Young will lead them to a win.
I think this is the loss. I think the next 9 games they go like 7-2, but this is one of the one they lose. I just think maybe I'm wrong because they're back to back for Atlanta, but I don't know. Atlanta's actually not bad this year, and I think this is one of those games where, especially if they beat Brooklyn, Detroit, they'll be kind of rolling too high and they need to be knocked off. Plus Saturday game.
Yeah.
They lose the weekend. Yeah, they just lose every weekend game since the beginning of the year. Saturday game. Just going with it right there.
Touche. That's a valid point. I think they go 2-1 this week. I don't know who they beat and lose to, but if they have a rough looking week, I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see what we talk about next week.
Well, this team's at a moment, right? If it can rebound and have a nice little
they can't streak rebound, here. We know that.
Funny, a nice little streak here. They can then get sort of, I don't know what the word is. It's kind of back in, you know, in. Back towards the top 5 versus if they sort of slide here, they could end up like in a dangerously like 8 or 9 seed territory by the time we hit the halfway point.
Yeah.
So, you got anything else? I mean, we've now talked 2 days in a row for like 2 hours.
No, I'm good. We have talked a lot. This is a big week for the Pacers, so I'm looking forward to seeing how they respond.
Yeah, and so Tony will have a show tomorrow previewing the Nets game. I will break down that game on Thursday, and I'll break down the Pistons game on Friday. Hopefully, Tony won't be on that show because they'll win that game. Then we'll be back again next week with a weekly show talking about the next week. So look ahead for those podcasts. And remember, today's Locked On Patriot Podcast is brought to you by 1010. 1010, an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Using only diamonds responsibly and sustainably sourced from Botswana, 10 design masters have each produced a set of uniquely beautiful diamond rings, and they're available now exclusively at BlueNile.com. It's an exciting collection of truly unique, limited diamond engagement rings available now at BlueNile.com. That's all for the Locked On Patriots Podcast. We'll see you guys again tomorrow.